Welcome to the Agency in Focus, Navy, sponsored by Leidos.
The Office of Naval Research has been around since the end of World War II. Then as now, the mission has always been to keep the Navy and Marine Corps on the cutting edge of science and technology. But unlike 70 years ago, a significant chunk of the scientific breakthroughs with military applications are coming from private industry, not necessarily government-funded research. Rear Admiral David Hahn is the Chief of Naval Research. As he tells Federal News Network's Jared Serbu, his job is to take advantage of both sources of innovation and to do it quickly.
The specific job jar, if you will, of the Chief of Naval Research is to plan, foster, and encourage scientific research for the maintenance of future naval power. And then the words in the law that created the Office of Naval Research go on to say, because of the paramount importance of the maritime in our national security, we're a maritime nation. So when I reflect on those words and then I reflect on the 2 years I've had in the job, I see incredible parallels between the period of time before the conflict, World War II, that conflict, and where we are today in the larger context of the competitive environment that we find ourselves in. And so as we're in the approaching the 2020s, it's pretty clear that we're in a great power competition environment, similar to several instances across the 20th century. Where we found ourselves in similar spots. And the pace of technological change today, as we're all very familiar with in our day-to-day lives, is superimposed upon this great power competition that we, the United States, and our like-minded partners and allies are in with countries like China and Russia. And that technological advancement and the pace of that is available to everybody. So this is not the exclusive domain of the United States. It's not the exclusive domain of the West. It's available to everybody, just like it was back in the 1930s, where there were incredible scientific discoveries being made that benefited the lives of everybody around the globe and also made possible some pretty, frankly, terrible weapons of warfare. Those same breakthroughs, those same discoveries, those same advances are being made today, and they're making life better. They're making things more efficient. They're making things much more pleasant in many places, both here in the U.S. and around the globe. But they're also advancing the opportunities for military application, and that can be troublesome if those are to be used in a way that's not consistent with where the U.S. and our partners and allies want to go.
Go ahead. Finish up your thought, please.
Yeah. So we find ourselves in that spot, and my charge as the Chief of Naval Research is to identify the opportunities, and then to position the Navy and the Marine Corps in a spot where we understand the science, we're connected to the discovery as it's made, and then as would be appropriate, in order to create the right level of military application in our terms for future naval power, to ensure that the deterrence that we expect as a U.S. Navy and Marine Corps to be made available to our national leaders, that deterrence in the form of the Navy and Marine Corps that we've got in the field at any one time as we move into the future, is the right force with the right capabilities so that the deterrent nature of that force prevents the kind of aggression that somebody might choose to pursue, like we saw, again, a couple times during the 20th century that ended up in the conflicts we called World War I and World War II. And, you know, the outcomes of those events, 20 million people around the globe killed because of World War I, 60 million in World War II, those are not outcomes that we're after, and we see ways to, through the application of technology into military force and the deterrence that results from that, we see ways across the Navy and Marine Corps to make a different set of outcomes the reality.
I want to be specific about one of the observations you made just a couple minutes ago about that pre-World War II period, which was the relative inability of the Defense Department as in, well, it wasn't the Defense Department then, but the military as an institution to absorb, uptake technology that was out there, that was in development. Is that one of the specific parallels that you see to today, is an inability to pick up technology that's out there?
No, no, I don't think we're in the same position, because my sense is that the mechanisms that we have today in the form of organizations like the Office of Naval Research and the institutional binding that we have and from the world of science all the way to the world of where the warfighters have these technologies available, that construct is very different than it was across this country going into World War II. We did not have the connectivity in an institutional sense to where these discoveries get made, largely our university system, right? That's where the basic research is happening. That's where the groundbreaking technologies are being explored. Today, the environment has a lot of that research being sponsored by commercial entities, which is different than it was back in the 1940s and 50s, when most of the investment was through a government action, not through a commercial entity. And we see companies here in the U.S. and around the globe being able to rapidly move from discovery to application and create things like the iPhone, right? And all these things that we've just become very used to. And that the quickness of that absorption is probably the issue. It's not the inability to absorb. I don't think we had the institutional connectivity in the 1930s to recognize it and take advantage of it. We have that now. We may have some struggles in our mechanisms, in our processes today to uptake it at the necessary speed, but I think we do uptake it.
Rear Admiral David Hahn is the Chief of Naval Research, speaking with Federal News Network's Jared Serbu. We'll continue the interview after a quick break. I'm Eric White.
Leidos has proudly supported the U.S. Navy for nearly 50 years with systems and solutions that span from seafloor to cyberspace. We're advancing global missions with agile, innovative IT and providing cyber expertise built for resilience and rapid response to ever-evolving threats. Our team brings commercial best practices and leading-edge technologies matched with a deep understanding of the defense sector's most complex challenges. At Leidos, we're developing practical answers for a complicated world. Visit leidos.com/seafloor to learn how.
We continue our interview with Rear Admiral David Hahn, Chief of Naval Research, speaking with Federal News Network's Jared Serbu.
Let's talk specifically about one of those families of technologies where commercial companies kind of are on the leading edge and where they are broadly available to potential adversaries, which would be artificial intelligence. And I wanted to ask you specifically about that, because when I've heard you talk at various venues, you've got an interesting way of framing, as you call them, the use cases for AI in the Navy. So where do you see potential there? We'll start with potential, and then we'll come back and talk about maybe pitfalls.
Sure. We think that artificial intelligence has great potential, and it's in a number of different use cases or lanes. There's the application of machine learning or optimization of a set of systems that today you could think about, for example, the delivery of goods by a company like Amazon. Their ability to connect to a wide variety of customers, to personalize that shopping experience, and then to rapidly, you know, same day delivery, somehow they're able to access a global logistics chain with end products and move those to a profit and loss center of one, you the customer, in the time it takes for most people just to think about that one day. That's an amazing application of algorithms that optimize a set of distribution and delivery mechanisms, right? So we have that same challenge inside of our Navy Marine Corps when you think about keeping ships and operators at sea, faraway places around the globe. So great opportunity for the application of machine learning, artificial intelligence algorithms in and amongst those logistics opportunities that we have. So clearly that's an area where we're ripe for improvement. All the way at the other end of the spectrum are the things that are very complicated in a wartime environment, and that would be the fog of war, the decision making with imperfect information, with with adversaries maybe deceiving that set of information, maybe putting false information on the line, making the information not continuous. Maybe that's just the fact of operating in, again, in faraway places with some kind of disadvantaged communication system that cuts in and out or is very challenging just because of the environments that are being operated in. And the use of artificial intelligence to assist the decision making that a military commander at the tactical or the operational level of war, working their way through to optimize the placement of forces or the use of those forces in a certain set or environment of adversary approaches or conditions. That's a very difficult application of artificial intelligence. That's got a long way to go.
Mm-hmm.
So we looked at that whole spectrum, and we're in the position now, given our connection to the scientific community over, frankly, decades, where we've been connected with the advances in machine learning, deep learning, seeing how now with what's available in the world of compute and processing makes some things available that were not available before in terms of the effectiveness of those algorithms and accessing large databases and moving the data through the algorithm. I think will be in a continuous improvement of the opportunities across that spectrum from relatively easy deterministic all the way to the very hard across the next several decades. And I'd like to point out, in the vein of a great power competition with a country like China, that China has made it very clear that the quest or the race for artificial intelligence is, in their terms, the next space race. And China's pursuing that as a national initiative, and their intention, stated quite plainly, is that they want to control not just access, but control 20% of the world's data by 2020 and 30% of the world's data by 2030. And they want to win that space race, as they call it, and that's in air quotes, space race to apply artificial intelligence to commerce, to economics, to trade, to all those things that in a great power competition are just as, if not more important than military power. And they also want to apply it to military application. And so it's possible to do. We see this as a competitive space that we're not just going to compete in, but we're going to win in. So that's an area where we're going to put a lot of energy and effort, and not just us as the Navy Marine Corps, but you're going to see that across the rest of the Department of Defense as well, I think.
And that raises another question, which is, based on your assessment of the state of the technology, what's the right way to think about where it's feasible, A, feasible, and B, appropriate to substitute what has been human decision-making with some level of machine decision-making? And I think that appropriate question is important because other countries might come to different conclusions about that than we will.
So, Jared, I think you're exactly on with your question, because I don't think other countries will come to the same conclusion as us. And we're being very deliberate about that. The ethics involved, the certainty, the trust necessary in substituting a machine decision for a human decision is one that we take much care in approaching. And this notion of the artificial intelligence mechanism, the algorithm, having to explain its answer, if you will, right? Sort of show me the math in a way that a human can at speed understand why the machine got to that point and agree that that's the right course of action, especially when we're talking about warfare. That's something we take very seriously, and that goes along with this whole journey towards applying artificial intelligence. You cannot do one without the other. So it's certainly our commitment that we're going to do this responsibly. And we're going to be in a position as well to point out those who are not doing this responsibly. And then there's going to have to be decisions that are made about what's to be done about that. But there's great danger. There's also great potential there.
That's Rear Admiral David Hahn, Chief of Naval Research, talking with Federal News Network's Jared Serbu. One more break, then we'll return with the final segment. I'm Eric White.
Leidos has proudly supported the U.S. Navy for nearly 50 years with systems and solutions that span from seafloor to cyberspace. We're advancing global missions with agile, innovative IT and providing cyber expertise built for resilience and rapid response to ever-evolving threats. Our team brings commercial best practices and leading-edge technologies matched with a deep understanding of the defense sector's most complex challenges. At Leidos, we're developing practical answers for a complicated world. Visit leidos.com/seafloor to learn how.
There have been a lot of headlines recently about technology companies unwilling to work with military and defense agencies. Leaders of those departments are currently working to bring those companies back into the fold to ensure innovation at the Pentagon doesn't slow down. Rear Admiral David Hahn, the Chief of Naval Research, tells Federal News Network's Jared Serbu about some of the challenges he's endured.
I was very encouraged by some of the other conversations that I've either read about or been in with other leaders, thought leaders in the community. I think the response by the CEO of Microsoft, when asked a similar kind of question, was just about perfect. He was asked if Microsoft is a U.S. company or a global company, and I'll get the exact words wrong, but the essence of his answer was we're a U.S. company, and we're a U.S. company that understands and agrees with the ethical constructs that are part and parcel of America and the American ideal. We have a global presence, however, and so we're not going to shirk that. And we understand that we have global responsibilities. But at the end of the day, we're an American company, and without those American ideals being available to us, and America as we know it and we perceive it to be in the future, being a place for Microsoft to exist and to operate, all of the rest of that is meaningless. So. Yeah, so they're at the end of the day, they recognize that the American ideal is one that is consistent with that company. Now, does that mean everybody in Microsoft agrees along that same line? Not sure, and I'm not sure if that's the case in all these other places. So again, I think we're going to have lots of conversation about it. But at the end of the day, we got to recognize that China has a very clear ideological approach to how a government and its citizenry should interact, and that's different than the approach that we as Americans have about how a government and its citizenry should interact. And those are not close enough in ideology to mitigate at the moment. So I think we need to be very thoughtful about where we put our allegiances in this. Which side are we going to help, especially when the potential for dangerous application of artificial intelligence, especially in the military application, is out there.
Admiral, we've been pretty technology-focused in our conversation so far, and in at least in our last few minutes, I wanted to bring up at least one example of the more sciencey side of what ONR focuses on, which is Task Force Ocean. Talk about some of the goals behind that program and why the Navy broadly and ONR specifically sees this renewal of interest in ocean science as important.
Well, it goes back to the mission statement for the Office of Naval Research. It goes back to the essence of our nation as a maritime nation. So everything about the maritime is important to us, both in a Navy application as well as just in general, right? Our economic lifeblood is the engine, commerce, food, everything about the ocean is important to America. So the connection between the Office of Naval Research and those folks in the community who advance the ocean sciences, again, the great scientists and researchers that we have at places like MIT, Woods Hole, Scripps, University of Washington, folks just magnets around the country of the forward-most thinkers and doers in the ocean sciences. We need to remain connected to that group of great Americans in a way that we have not been connected for about the last decade or two. We enjoyed a very robust connection to that community back in the last great power competition that we were in, and that was the Cold War. And as a Navy, we derived great advantage from our better understanding of that environment, and not just for military application, but for everything across what the ocean sciences could bring. And so as we unfortunately let that relationship atrophy a little bit, we have now recognized that as we enter into this next great power competition phase, that we need to renew that and renew it in a way that the next generation of those great thinkers out there in the ocean sciences are connected to the Navy, because we need them and what they're doing out there to be very not just connected but have an inherent understanding of what the Navy challenges in the use of the ocean might be, and to be thinking about our problem every day, maybe not solving it every day, but when it pops, then we'll be in a position to access those individuals, and they'll be very familiar with our challenges, and we'll get to the solutions a lot quicker. Because as you indicated earlier, Jared, it's sometimes the uptake of that solution that is the biggest challenge that we might have. So the closer we can be to the scientific community, to those individuals, the better off we're going to be as a Navy. So that's why we've made a full effort to go and reinvigorate that connection and to bring some more resources to bear and to really generate the next set of ocean scientists who are connected to your United States Navy.
And I'm just curious, why exactly did those relationships, as you said, atrophy? And what are some of the specific things that you're doing to rebuild them?
So I think that, as with all things, when you have green advantage and you're not challenged, you relax a little bit. And we see that not just in that area, but in several other areas. So I think we've been recalibrated and retuned to the competitive nature of the environment we're in, and we're all responding to that. And some of the specific things that we're doing are dedicating the resources to commit to 50 new graduate students in the ocean sciences, sponsored by the Office of Naval Research and the United States Navy, and 50 new postdocs along the same lines, again, sponsored by the Office of Naval Research, the Oceanographer of the Navy, and in general, the United States Navy. That coupled with some pretty groundbreaking ocean sciences research that's going to be happening across a broad portfolio of opportunities made available by the recognition, frankly, by the Congress, that this is an area that we as America need to retain some advantage. They've provided some additional resources. So the research coupled with, again, this ability to connect and educate this next generation of scientists, we see those as two wonderful opportunities. And then we're also reconnecting that scientific group with our operators. And this is operators in our submarine forces, our surface forces, those who require an intimate understanding of the environment they're operating in, and the application of some of these other things like artificial intelligence and big data brought into that environment, so that we're thinking about the solution space going forward. We're making investments there and connecting to the right parts of a multidisciplinary ecosystem that we hope will bring great benefit to the Navy.
Rear Admiral David Hahn is the Chief of Naval Research. He spoke with Federal News Network's Jared Serbu. You can find this entire interview online. Go to federalnewsnetwork.com and search Agency in Focus. I'm Eric White.
Thank you for listening to Agency in Focus, Navy, sponsored by Leidos on federalnewsnetwork.com and 1500 AM. The entire program can be found on demand at federalnewsnetwork.com. Search Agency in Focus.